If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in God's love. I have said these things to you so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. No one has greater love than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. You are my friends if you do what I command you. I do not call you servants any longer, because the servant does not know what the master is doing. But I have called you friends, because I have made known to you everything that I have heard from my Father. Will all who are able join me in prayer? But we have so many questions, O God. So many things that are not made known to us. Help us increasingly to live in peacefulness without all the answers, to grow in serenity as we commit ourselves to friendship with one another and with your Spirit. Amen. The beloved community is a concept that was, the phrase was coined by philosopher and theologian Josiah Royce early in the 20th century. The phrase was made more popular by Dr. Martin Luther King, who lived later and was himself a member of the Fellowship of Reconciliation that Josiah Royce had founded. Dr. King taught that the beloved community was not just some lofty utopian ideal that could never be attained in this lifetime, some kind of rapturous image like the lion and the lamb coexisting together that might happen in some other world, but was something we had never seen in this world. No, rather, Dr. King taught that the beloved community was actually attainable, that it was something that a community of friends could achieve, could commit to, and that, in fact, critical mass could be formed in communities that dedicated themselves to follow in the way of Jesus, committing themselves to nonviolence. In fact, Dr. King taught that really the essence of the teaching of Jesus was the beloved community, the commandment that we are called to form a community, a sacred community of friends. Dr. King also taught that human existence really is social in nature, and that's part of the background understanding of why we need something like the beloved community. Dr. King said, whether we realize it or not, personal growth cannot take place apart from meaningful relationships with other persons. That the I cannot attain fulfillment without the thou. Now, this I-thou language is a reference to the philosopher and theologian Martin Buber, who tried to encourage us to think about our identity, our core identity, what it means to be human in a new way. To understand that we by ourselves are never complete, and even though we cannot totally escape our subjective view, our perspective, we're called to try and leap in faith to connect with God and with others, even to get outside of our own subjectivity. Because, Buber said, so often we treat each other as objects. And we need to remember that somehow we can respect the reality that other people are always more than our idea of who they are. Just like God is always more than our idea of God. And that if we stay in touch with that, we can recognize the other as a thou rather than as an it. To remember that when we relate to other people, we're seeking to get outside the bonds of ourself. To remember that other people are not just some kind of a means to get what we want or an avenue to achieve our goals. But there's this enticing possibility that we could really have something like a communion with somebody outside of our own limited self. Jesus taught that we are to be friends with each other. And I think that the kind of friendship Jesus was talking about was something like what Dr. King called the beloved community, or what Martin Buber called the I-thou relationship. Jesus said, I no longer call you servants, but I call you friends. That blows my mind. Does that seem exciting, shocking, scary, odd to you? To think, to imagine Jesus saying to you, I no longer call you a servant, but I call you friends. That goes hand in hand with this commandment to love one another, to befriend each other. On the one hand, talk about friendship sounds pretty fluffy and shallow in a way. Like, oh, that's kind of a trite greeting card kind of a value, friendship, right? But interestingly enough, in the highest academic circles in philosophy and theology, there's more and more being written about friendship as a base for ethics, for being human, and understanding that in new ways. And I think it's worth recognizing that it's no easy task just being a circle of friends, right? When Jesus said, I call you friends, now you must love one another, it wasn't as if that was something that we could take for granted or assume would be easy. Do you ever wonder if the world needs the church anymore? Do you ever wonder when you look around the world what the role of the church can be or might be in the future? One thing I believe for sure is when I look around the world, I see a lot of terrible loneliness and isolation. A lot of people in desperate need for community and friendship. I do not think that that need in the world is any less today or looks to be any less in the future than it was in the past. And Jesus called his followers to form. The Greek word is ekklesia, and it's translated church, churches, but it can also be translated assembly or gathering or community. Jesus commanded his followers to form circles, webs, networks of friends who support each other and challenge each other, who grow together in God's Spirit. So how can we then be a better circle of friends to each other? How can we check ourselves to see how we're doing with this commandment from Jesus Christ to love each other? I don't think Jesus meant the same thing that we mean when we talk about that we should like each other. No, it's not that at all, and I'm glad about that. I'm pretty sure that Jesus, in fact, said some things about loving even people you don't like, even people you disagree with or have conflict with or sometimes think of as your adversaries, loving even outcasts and strangers, and even those who may threaten you. So this work of befriending causes us to dig down really deep. But let's just start with some simple suggestions. I have a few suggestions about how we can check ourselves on this commandment about loving each other. First of all, I'd ask you, if you want to follow this commandment, to think about learning each other's names. For instance, how can we say that we love each other, or that we're friends or friendly with each other in our community, if we haven't taken the time and effort to learn each other's names? It's not easy. I have a really hard time remembering names. But it seems like that's a pretty important first step at becoming friends. You remember that television sitcom Cheers, that song? Sometimes you want to go to a place where everybody knows your name, and they're always glad you came. You want to be where you can see. Our troubles are all the same. You want to be where everybody knows your name. The desire to know and be known is a pretty universal and human one that goes deep. But of course, learning each other's names is just a beginning. We have to learn more about each other than our names. We need to really listen to each other, to our stories, be willing to share and receive each other's joys and concerns, know about the struggles that we're going through. I often hear people complaining that they don't have friends at church. And I know for certain that we've had people who have come here and gotten involved and joined and then drifted away, at least in part, I think, because they didn't feel that they made friends. And so it brings to mind again the sacred trust and the calling and commitment involved in being a community of friends. How can we develop skills and habits then of being better friends? One day, Charlie Brown and Linus were talking, and Charlie Brown asked Linus, "What would you do, Linus, if you felt that nobody liked you?" Linus thought about that for a moment, and then he said, "Well, Charlie Brown, I guess I'd take a really hard look at myself and ask myself if I was doing anything to turn people off. Ask, how can I improve myself? Do I need to change in some way?" "Yep, that's my answer, Charlie Brown." And Charlie Brown said, "I hate that answer." That's not much different from Dale Carnegie, who once said, "You can make more friends in 2 months by becoming interested in other people than you can in 2 years trying to get other people interested in you." To be better friends, we need to develop our skills of listening to each other. There was an 80-year-old grandfather who had Sunday dinner at his daughter's house one day and then said he was just going to go out in the neighborhood for a 20-minute walk. He was gone over 2 hours, and his family was beginning to worry when he finally came back. When he got back, he told the family, "Oh, I'm sorry. I know I said I was going to be back earlier, but I ran into an old friend, and he just wouldn't stop listening." How are you doing at listening with others? It's a good way to make friends. We need to develop habits of making friends, learning each other's names, listening to each other. One way to make friends is to wear your name tag and to be willing to introduce yourself over and over again, even though you've done it before, to other people to help them learn your name. Just a habit for helping us make friends. To remember that this commandment to love each other, to be friends to each other, to befriend each other, is the work of changing lives, is the sacred and godly work of following the Christ. So I think my third suggestion for making friends is that maybe we can make a commitment to take a stand for friendship, come what may, through good times and hard times, to make a commitment to take a stand, including all the risks and wounds and pains that it can be to be friends. I remember once I danced with my father. It was at some kind of reception where he was getting an honor, and I always thought that my mother and father were such great dancers together. But when I danced with my father, as much as we both love each other, we just about ended up with black and blue bruises from stepping on each other's feet and bumping into each other. Sometimes the close work of living together or working together causes us to bump into each other and step on each other's toes, but we can still take a commitment and stand for friendship. Jackie Robinson was the first African-American baseball player to make it in the major leagues. It took a lot of courage and commitment on his part, breaking the color barrier. And everywhere he went, there were crowds that jeered at him and booed at him. Once he was playing in his own home stadium in Brooklyn, and he made an error in the game. The crowd started jeering, and Jackie Robinson was standing on second base, humiliated, just wanting to disappear, and the crowd's jeers grew louder and louder, and they started booing louder and louder. And then, without saying a word, the shortstop, whose name was Pee Wee Reese, just quietly walked over and put his arm around Jackie Robinson and stood there and faced the crowd. And silence fell over the whole stadium, and the game went on. And later, Jackie Robinson said, "That arm around my shoulder saved my career." Now, you may never have had a time in your life when you felt the jeers of the crowd like that. But there's somebody in this room right here today who needs an arm around their shoulder. Will you take a commitment and a stand to be that person who befriends someone else? In our faith-based work of community organizing, faith-based community organizing with Voice is organized in civic engagement, I've been trained that one of the rules of organizing is that there are no permanent friends and no permanent enemies. In other words, some people may be an ally in one movement when we're working on something together, and then that same person or organization may be an adversary the next year working on some other issue. So when I heard that phrase, at first I thought, well, in the church, we're not like that. We have permanent friends, and we don't have any enemies or adversaries. But I've thought about that teaching more and more, and thought there's something right about detaching and making a commitment to say, although that person may look like my enemy or adversary right now, they may not be next month or next year. There's something we can learn from that, I think. I look around this room and think about times when we've shared just euphoric, heady joy and fun in ministry together, felt so close and such deep friendship working together on things. And then with some of those same relationships, it's as if a chasm opened up over some conflict. And the tension and the pain is so deep. I can understand why people don't want to get mixed up in a community of friends. It's a lot easier to stay at home alone and just watch TV sometimes. But I've also seen God's healing power, that over time, even someone who seemed like an adversary became a great friend again through the commitment to stand together as a circle of friends, as a community of friends in God's care. So as I've gotten older, when I start to get mad at someone or think that someone is an adversary, I know that in the long run, it's going to work out. That in the long run, I'll have to get over it, and hopefully I won't have to apologize too much along the way. And so I've decided I might as well just skip that part of being mad, because we're all spending eternity together, so we might as well start getting used to each other and figuring out how to get along right now. If anything is a baseline for what our church should be, surely it should at least be a community of friends. I'm closing today with a story from Melvin Newland that reminds us that we can only obey God, that we can only be our best selves in relationships with other people. This is a story about a college student who is working on his doctoral thesis and went to live for a year on a Navajo reservation. And he lived for a year in a hut with a family, eating the food that they ate, doing the work that they ate, and working really with the whole village of that community. The end of his time together, he especially was reluctant to leave the grandmother of the family. This Navajo grandmother had befriended him, and even though they couldn't speak each other's language, somehow they connected and formed a friendship and a bond deeper than any he had ever known before. So when the community had a celebration, a going away celebration for him, there were a lot of people who were sad, knowing how much they would miss each other. But the old grandmother came, and she took his face between her hands. She looked him in the eye, and she said to him a few words of English that she had learned from him. She said, "I like me best when I'm with you." Jesus said, "This commandment I give you, that you love one another. And I no longer call you servants, but I call you friends." May it be so in our lives as well. Will you join with me in a moment of silence?